We all wish we could talk to animals. As it turns out, we can. Animal Connections with Laura Rowley explores the nature of interspecies communication. What are our animals trying to tell us? Animals commune through love, a force that opens all doors. Listening to them teaches us how to be better humans. Why? We can trust them to tell us the deepest truth about who we are and how one can grow into a more powerful version of self. Laura shares over 20 years of stories and wisdom learned from her work as an animal communicator in this hard and thought-provoking show.
Welcome. I'm Laura Rowley. You can listen to Animal Connections with Laura Rowley on syndicated Dream Vision 7 radio network every Friday at 9 a.m. or 9 p.m. Eastern Time. You can listen online or on your mobile devices. To learn more and for a full schedule, go to dreamvision7radio.com. Dream Vision 7 Radio Network is the media partner for Omega Institute. Thank you so much for tuning in today. You're connecting with Animal Connections with Laura Rowley, a show that examines the relationship between the animal kingdom and the human kingdom. In other words, how we people foster, care, and learn from our animals. We cover everything from the energy we share, the training we share, the lifestyles we share, and how each of us can do some self-examination sometimes to improve the quality of life for ourselves as well as for the animals that we share our lives with. As an animal communicator, people call me to try to help them get some different perspective on their relationship with their animals. And I'm always very happy to do that, honored, in fact, because there is always so much to learn. I know I continually learn from my own animals. And one of the things that people often ask me is, well, how do you figure this stuff out? Like, you always make it sound so easy. So, well, I have, I'm a pretty powerful empath. In other words, I'm able, to feel the feelings that you and the animal are sharing when you phone me and we have our appointed time slot. I feel them and I see them like in living color, like small visions that tell big stories. It's amazing what stories can be told from simple things like body posture, a slumped tail, a wagging tail. Think of the differences between those two things if you're thinking about a dog. So for me, I'm just reading simple signs in sort of an empathic, unusual way. But these are simple signs that you are also reading, you know, from the home front, from your own life. In other words, you're seeing the same thing perhaps I'm seeing, or probably even more than. I always ask people to give me their interpretation of the issue and to share any insights they want to share, because they see even more than I see. They're just asking me to help them with the perspective of it. So when we share with an animal, what can we learn from that experience is one of the questions that this show has always focused on. Learning is fun. Why not learn and play and grow with an animal that's teaching us so much about life and love and trust, for sure, but also teaching us about ourselves and how we respond in certain situations becomes pretty evident when you start to share a life with an animal. And so why is that? Well, one of the reasons that I wanted to focus on today, because of course there's a million reasons, but one of the reasons is that we share an energy field with an animal. Now, I know if you've listened to this show before, you've heard me say this before, but what exactly do I mean when I say we share an energy field? There's a lot of different ways you can think about this. The idea of resonance is a good maybe analogy or metaphor to this idea. Everything in the world has a resonance. It has a tone. It has a vibe. Some of it we're very aware of. Things like, let's take thunder, for instance. That has the vibe of a deep vibration. Lightning has the crack and the crackle of vibration. Well, so too do our emotions. They're not really all that dissimilar. Thunder, you know, the deep resonance of something might be when we feel something with power and knowledge and we know it to be true. In fact, we're willing to change things around us if it's not true. We believe heartily in something. Lightning, the cracking, crackling, is maybe when we're nervous or we're excited about an exciting day. We're going to a birthday party or something really great's happening in our life. So we're all crackling with energy and excitement. So those are examples of how two simple things like thunder and lightning have a resonance, something that we're all very familiar with. So because those are strong examples, they're good to start with. But if you kind of take that scale of strength of vibration down to more subtle things, if you move it to the more subtle regions of human existence, there's tons of things we feel in any moment of every day throughout our whole lives that have a resonance to them or a feeling. You wake up in the morning, you love the feel of your pillow, you feel safe. Suddenly that feel of that pillow feels like safety and bed and warmth. Then you roll over, you see the sun peeking through the curtains, and you think, oh, I live in a beautiful place. This is marvelous. The sun is out, and I'm part of nature. Now, those might be the first 2 seconds of your day. The day progresses. Maybe then you realize you're late for a meeting, so all of a sudden you're starting to feel the resonance of nervousness. I should have gotten up earlier. What was I doing lolling around in my pillow? I should have gotten going. I need to have this assignment ready for my meeting, and I'm not really there yet. I better get going. All of a sudden, you have the resonance of nervousness, anxiety, maybe even a little guilt for having lounged too long. And so it progresses throughout the day. That is what we lend to the resonance or the recipe that we add to the day is what we are feeling. Animals do the same thing. They do it in a little bit of a simpler way. But it's kind of like a tuning fork is a good analogy. What they start to feel, we pick up on. What they are feeling, we pick up on. And we make a very complex sort of symphony, if you will, or a musical score of how the day is going to go based on what everybody's putting into the whole score. So it's like a tuning fork. If I were to sit here with a tuning fork, you know, in real time, and I binged the tuning fork, I've talked about this before, and say it was tuned to the note of C, then C would ring out clear as a bell. If you were sitting here with me and you were holding a C, your tuning fork would also vibrate and start to sing out like a C. Anyone in the room that had another tuning fork that didn't have a C in their hand would not get a vibration. So the two of us in the room, in other words, that have C's, have changed the vibration of the room to being the vibration of the note of C. Everyone else is maybe out of the loop or not yet activated. Maybe they'll be next, whatever. But in other words, our two vibrations have caused that. So this is very similar to what we see with the two vibrations that can occur with the animal kingdom and the human kingdom. They can be, for instance, excited and happy, and you come down the stairs in a glum mood. They're joyous and wagging their tails or circling their bowl and meowing and looking for food. It makes us think, oh, it's a happy day. We're all going to eat together and yay. And all of a sudden, maybe we feel a little happier and lighter. And all of a sudden, the vibration of happiness starts to fill our kitchen space, for instance. So like the tuning fork, the two beings, the animal and the human, start to create a force field that's sort of different from ourselves, but yet it encompasses each of us. So if you take an example, and I'll use kind of a silly example, but one I hear pretty frequently about a confident person. So I'll use an example of a gentleman. His name is Jeff. And he and I talk quite a bit, and he has a house full of animals that he loves and tries to take great care of, and so he's always trying to fine-tune how he does that, which is great So he has this spooky cat that has moved in with him that he calls Halloween, because it seems like Halloween is always sort of convinced there's evil lurking around the corner and skitters off and then maybe hides under a bed for a day, maybe won't even eat for that evening, then acts pretty normal for 2 days, then suddenly looks up, looks like she sees something that's scaring her, and then scoots another way and is weird for 2 days. So Jeff wanted to know, well, what's going on in Halloween's head? You know, we've been living together for a long time, but this seems to be getting more and more pronounced. Halloween is getting spookier. No pun intended. There's one of two things that are happening if we kind of look at it this way. One is that either Jeff is starting to be more like the cat, or the cat, Halloween, is starting to become more like Jeff. So that's a kind of simplistic way of stripping things down, right? Not how we usually think about things. So if we try to strip things down and keep it super simple, we have two ideas. Either Jeff's getting more like the cat, or the cat's getting more like Jeff. They've been together, I don't know, they've been together 8 or 10 years, a long time. So because Jeff is in charge of the household, is Jeff chilling out and calming down Halloween? Or is Jeff amping up and getting nervous because Halloween is showing signs of distress and Jeff hates it when Halloween's unhappy? So those are the two different ways we can look at it. And it's a good practice for you to do when you're trying to figure out what's going on in your household of behavior changes. You can ask yourself, am I part of the behavioral change? Like maybe I had a bad week at work and I'm a nervous wreck, so maybe I'm making my animal nervous. Or conversely, we can say something happening that is complicating the animal's life and I need to become more aware of it and change my perspective and my ability to help them. You know, how can I help them? So this is kind of the theme of today, and that sounds sort of ridiculous, but I think we tend to make things way more complicated than is necessary or effective, actually. We tend to draw a lot of stuff out of nowhere and make everything be a lot more dramatic and a lot scarier. Think of the last time you had something happen where your animal started to behave in an alarming way and you really are concerned and you really love them and you really want to do the right thing. So you're not, you get into a whirl of confusion and distress. How can I help? What's wrong with them, you ask. So very frequently when I'm on the phone with people, that's why they call me, as they're trying to sort that out. So I wanted to share these ideas with you. The one idea is that keep it simple. So this is an idea that dates back maybe to the time of the philosopher Aristotle, maybe even before that. But it's been credited with a philosopher, a theologian named Occam. He lived in the 14th century. And he's credited with a philosophical idea about thinking about problems. And the idea is that this philosophical principle called Occam's razor, you probably have heard of it or seen it written. Occam's razor is the philosophical principle that allows you to shave off sort of unlikely examples and explanations to avoid unnecessary actions. So let's put that in a simpler way. You're trying to solve a problem. You're trying to maybe predict an outcome because you want maybe your animal to be happier. That's the predicted outcome. They're starting to show signs they're not happy. So you need to shave off all the unlikely reasons you might be thinking of why your animal is unhappy and get to the crux of it so that you can actually make a change that will be helpful. So Occam's razor is no more than a simple tool when you have competing theories about what's causing something, and when you want to come up with a prediction or an outcome, you need to pick the simplest one and start there. The one that is free of all assumptions, so that you don't make unnecessary assumptions and complicate your own thinking. In other words, you don't allow chaos to come into the thought. You keep it simple. So the explanation or the prediction that is the most simple, according to Occam's razor, is always the correct one. So I'll say that again. The simplest explanation is always the correct one. And if you start there and you find your simple answer, then you can save yourself a lot of drama and trauma and fear and trembling and also fix the problem faster. So I want to talk about that a little bit now. So here's a good example of Occam's razor. Perhaps I have a headache today. So there's two different things I could think, why do I have this headache? Oh my gosh, this is the worst headache I've ever experienced, I might be thinking. So I start to ponder, what could be wrong? Maybe I have a brain tumor. Maybe I have the black plague. Or maybe I'm dehydrated. Three simple answers. Brain tumor, black plague, dehydration. Well, what's the simplest one? Probably not the brain tumor, right? I have no history of brain tumors. My family doesn't have a history of brain tumor, and I didn't have the symptom until I woke up this morning. The black plague. Well, I haven't been to Italy in the 15th century, so I probably don't have the black plague. Dehydration. I drank a glass of wine last night for dinner. I didn't have much to drink of water before I went to bed, and I'm thirsty now. I bet it's dehydration. So dehydration, in that silly example, is the simplest answer, right? So that's how we would arrive with applying Occam's razor to the principle of why do I have my headache and what can I do about it is maybe drink a glass of water versus the whole brain tumor thing and getting afraid of for myself. Another simple example of that would be a flat tire. I have a flat tire in my car. I go out to my garage. I can't go to work. Oh, my God, no, what do I do? Flat tire. So what has caused the flat tire? Here's my predicament. What could be the explanation, I ask myself? One would be I drove over something sharp the day before. Another answer might be, oh, somebody crept into my garage and slashed my tires because they were angry with me, and I remember having a fight with my boyfriend 3 weeks ago, and I bet it was him. So, you get the idea. The first one, I drove over something sharp, is probably the correct answer. So, Occam applied this to, and people have used it for, oh gosh, Einstein, all kinds of people throughout history who were trying to develop theories, understand science, understand what scientific principles to apply to things, have used Occam's razor as sort of a benchmark, a standard, a principle, a tool that helps you kind of sort from the wheat from the chaff and get to the problem. So now let's go back to Jeff and Halloween. Jeff, the man who has the spooky cat, the cat that tends to be afraid of everything, skirt around his apartment wildly, and Halloween suddenly getting worse. Okay, so one answer might be, A, that maybe Halloween for some reason isn't resonating with the idea of feeling safe. Simple. Versus, what Jeff was thinking about was that he was worried that Halloween was ill, maybe had a cancer he couldn't see, was sensing ghosts, and that maybe his house was haunted. So you can see where, if we apply Occam's razor to this idea, the haunted house might be a factor. Probably simpler, though, to think maybe that somehow Halloween is not feeling safe for an earthly reason. Right? It's a simpler answer. Though I do believe in ghosts. In this case, it was a simple answer. What was it? Was he sick? No, it was Jeff was upset. He had to move. His life was getting turned upside down. He was starting to not resonate with the feeling of safety, so he wasn't adding safety to the recipe. So Halloween thought, we're not safe here. But really what it was Jeff in his mind was walking around thinking, I'm going to have to move here. I'm going to have to get rid of that bed. I'm going to have to box all this stuff. I hope I can get there on time. I have to drive across the country. I don't know if I'm going to be able to have the energy to do it because I got to start my new job in a week and a half. So Jeff had been brewing, if you will, and stewing and lending to the resonance of what they shared together, the idea that life is changing, we're upset, it's super scary. And the cat took it quite literally, thinking, well, we're not safe here. So he's hiding under the bed going, oh, we got real troubles. The sky is falling. So they needed to really realize that the two of them were bringing in a lot of emotion, when really the only thing that they were concerned with was the problem of, are we safe? So when I phrased it like that to Jeff, who's an intelligent man, and of course understood that he was indeed safe on this planet, he was just a little stressed. And I told him, you're going to have to sort of work on the mantra of, I am safe and we are fine. It's going to be a little upsetting for a couple of weeks, but this is no big deal. And you and Halloween will get through this. Halloween is not ill. Halloween is not seeing ghosts. Your house is not haunted. Relax, refocus, and all will be well again. And of course he laughed about it because way more complicated. He hadn't applied the idea of Occam's razor, but that is what I'm telling you, is it's kind of human nature to make it more complicated. That is sort of what we do, myself included. So I want you to use Occam's razor as a tool to start to identify when you are indeed doing that so that you can pull yourself back, get yourself happier, change things up, and get a happier result and a happier outcome. So I took a really simple case with Jeff and with his little spooky cat Halloween. And when I come back, we're going to do some more work around this idea. And you are listening to Animal Connections with Laura Rowley. Thank you so much. I'll be back in a few minutes.
Animal Connections with Laura Rowley is an intuitive show created for you to learn what it's like to talk to animals. Laura shares 20 years of experiences of being a pet psychic and healer every Friday at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. Eastern Time on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, media partner for the Omega Institute. Our beloved animals share our lives and have amazing insights into our well-being, providing us with opportunities for personal growth once we truly begin to listen. It's fun to use animal wisdom to enhance our emotional and spiritual world. Who better than our furry friends to teach us the wisdom born of unconditional love? What if your dog, cat, or horse could help you with your love life? What would they suggest? It's fun to think about and a wonderful way to conduct yourself. After all, animals know well how to love and invite us to love them unconditionally. That's a pretty great way to live life. Animals always communicate with our highest good as their central focus, even when sometimes we feel stymied or frustrated with their behavior. Visit laurarowleyhealer.com to book a workshop or private long-distance phone reading. Laura's readings and workshops help you find the part of you that's able to tune in and connect to your amazing animals. Laura Rowley believes we can all understand by listening differently. Book a workshop or private long-distance phone reading now by going to laurarowleyhealer.com. That's LauraRowley healer.com.
Quantum Jumps presents a radical new paradigm that we exist in an interconnected holographic multiverse in which we literally jump from one parallel universe to another. In a moment, you can become smarter, more confident, happier, more outgoing, more effective, in better relationships, with more willpower. When you sense a new connection to another possible you, living the life you prefer, immerse yourself naturally into that new state of being. And voila, you've made a quantum jump. Supported by scientific research, Quantum Jumps is an inspirational book backed with practical tools to help you live a happier, more prosperous life. Learn more at quantumjumps.com.
The Soul Seat with psychic visionary Debbie Corr is where you'll discover how to awaken your soul, heal, and manifest. Are you searching for answers in all areas of life? Then have a seat and discover your life and soul's purpose. Whatever you're going through, Devi's here to help you find your way forward. The Soul Seat can be heard every Tuesday at 1 a.m. and 1 p.m. Eastern, with live shows on the first and third Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern, 12 p.m. Central, when you can call Devi to receive psychic answers and spiritual solutions right here on syndicated Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Are you searching for a way to help create global change? Dream Vision 7 Radio Network's vision is to have an eclectic group of radio hosts dedicated to educating, enlightening, and helping humankind with positive messages and tools that enhance lives using different modalities and programs. If you would like to join our team and help illuminate the universe, call Deborah at 508-226-1723 or Deborah at dreamvision7radio.com.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
Welcome back. This is Laura Rowley, and you are listening to Animal Connections with Laura Rowley on syndicated Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. I'm on every Friday at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. Eastern Time. You can listen online or on your mobile devices. Thanks so much for tuning in today. We are discussing how to keep it simple when things get feeling very complicated in our lives with our animals, and we're trying to do the very best we can do. How do we do that? How do we keep it simple? One of my jobs, I feel, is to help people reflect back on themselves so that they can see they're making things a little complicated, because I know that usually in my own life with my own animals, I have horses and dogs, and I usually make it complicated myself, so I understand how that goes. So I like to try to lend my professional objectivity to this conversation so that you can get better clarification on an action or a situation that's sort of bothering you. If you want to simplify how your energy is affecting the situation, then one of the things you want to look at is you want to look at sort of what outcome are you expecting so that you could improve the situation. If we go back to Jeff and Halloween again, on some level, what was Jeff expecting? He was expecting kind of a nightmarish couple weeks of having to move, and he was expecting chaos, which honestly is probably pretty true of moving. I think we all feel that way when we move. It's no fun. So his expectation of chaos was adding chaos as one of the chief resonants of the house. He was making up the chaos, in other words. The chaos wasn't happening by itself, right? It was his choice to move. It was his choice to box boxes. Now, how he does it could either be peaceful, systematic, organized, or he could be like, "Ah, this is going to be so hard. I can't get this done. I'm never going to be able to do it. I better start making boxes, la, 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 la." That's what he was doing. So he was laughing at himself, because truly, it'd be nice if we could all be totally, you know, calm in the face of something as difficult as like a household move. But we don't really need to add chaos to it by treating it like it's a national disaster just because we have to move. People move all the time, and it always works out. It's an inconvenient week or three. It's not an earthquake happening in your house, for instance, right? So Jeff was making it be more than it was. So he was adding the resonance of chaos to this move. Halloween, her brain was very simple and very nervous and very geared toward national disasters. Halloween had been rescued from somewhere in the South, they don't know much about this totally, where hurricanes had been occurring. So they believe that Halloween had come through some really bad, you know, hurricane, who knows what happened to her. She was stuck somewhere in a building. There was water. She couldn't get out, she told me. So you know, she wasn't able to eat. She didn't know she's going to get rescued. When she did, she got stuck in a cage and shipped to another state where the rescue, where Jeff eventually found her at the rescue. So Halloween, it turns out, had some pretty significant and well-earned PTSD from having to been relocated from a storm. So there's Jeff adding to it by saying, we are getting relocated. This is going to be horrible. Chaos is going to ensue. We're in big trouble. Right? So she, no wonder, was wigging out because she'd been there before and it had really ended. Whatever life she had before that was peaceful had turned into, you know, real chaos. And it ended up being happy a decade earlier. She found Jeff, but let's face it, something else could have happened that would have been maybe not quite as wonderful for her. And she could have died easily if no one had ever found her. So Jeff examined that and thought, we're both contributing energy to the situation. And, you know, Jeff thought, I can calm down because I can make this better by contributing with the clarity of saying, I'm just contributing unsafety to this, not safety. Cats and animals, dogs, birds, fishes, horses, ponies, burros, even turkeys, who I've spoken to, and turtles, who I've spoken to, they want to feel safe. So safety is a biggie for them. Okay, and we tend to not always contribute safety to their life as well as we should when we launch into our morning. So back to the example of when I first started this morning, I was talking about how I went from being happy on my pillow with the sun shining to realizing I was late and, oh my God, I'm in so much trouble. So I launched right away into there is a catastrophe at hand. Now, I think humans do that constantly, right? It really isn't a catastrophe if I'm a little late. Really isn't a catastrophe if I'm slightly underprepared. It doesn't compare to Halloween's experience of a hurricane and maybe dying and drowning, right? But Halloween doesn't know the difference. She just feels the resonance of the idea that things are not okay. We have doomsday coming. So you get it. Very interesting how humankind doesn't apply Occam's razor. We make everything complicated, right? Okay, so knowing about that about ourselves is part of loving being a human being. We have to be sympathetic and understand that we do that, but it also helps that the animal kingdom points it out for us so that we see the lunacy that we sometimes add to simple things that don't have to be that hard. And I am just as guilty as the next person. I am a study in myself, of myself, of mankind, because everything I talk to you about, I participate in on some level or another. So one way you can ask yourself when you're looking at these ideas, like when you have a predicament with your animal, a behavior that shows up that's alarming you, you can ask yourself, something pretty simple to clarify. One is like for this, in the case of Halloween and Jeff, is Halloween just being a cat? Is Halloween just doing normal cat stuff? And if the answer is hiding under a bed when we're stressed, that's pretty normal cat stuff. Then you can ask your same question about Jeff. Is he just doing normal mankind stuff? Human stuff? Getting alarmed because he's got a big job ahead of him moving. And when we can look at it like that, we can be kind to ourselves about it. We're just being humans. They're just being animals. And we can't always fix their animalhood for them, nor should we. They're allowed to be alarmed if they're just an animal that doesn't know that really we're only moving to another state and it's no big deal. They're not looking at the roadmap with us. They can't read the roadmap. And we can be kind to ourselves and say, well, I'm just being a human. I'm being a little neurotic and I got to calm down. It helps a lot when we kind of tease that out. We can relax then, right? I spoke to a woman who had a pony named Moxie. And Moxie was a fancy show pony her whole life and was cared for in a beautiful manner in a lovely barn. everything was always just perfect for Moxie, because the woman just loved this pony and revered the pony, spent a lot of time with the pony. So Moxie became disillusioned with living in a stall and stopped being happy in her pretty little house all of a sudden. She started to pace. She stopped eating. She wanted to be outside all the time. When they put her outside, she was fine and she was quiet. So we got together with Moxie, and the owner, her name was Janice, said, "I just hate this, but she wants to be out in rain and sleet and snow, and she's always had this beautiful life, and I've always taken great care of her. Now all of a sudden when I bring her in the barn, she's a wreck, and I don't know what's going on or why it's going on, and I want to do better by her. What do I do? Get her to come in the barn and tell her, please, everything's okay." So we tuned in with Moxie, who was a Shetland pony. And she happened to have been a very fancy Shetland pony, so she was very successful in the horse show world. And she said, "Well, I just want to be outside like I'm supposed to be." Because Shetland ponies, if you've ever looked up what the Shetland Islands are or perhaps visited them, they are raw, austere hunks of rock on the side of, heather. There's not much that grows there. It's a rough place. It's a beautiful place. But it's not a cushy existence. So for her, she was sort of sick of the life of being a show pony. She didn't really want to do all that refinement. She had kind of aged out of it. And so she said to Janice, "Thank you for this beautiful life, but I'm really kind of ready to retire. I would like to just hang out and be a pony. I want to get dirty. I want to roll in the dirt. I want to have my girlfriends with me. I don't want to be in the stall and be a pampered anymore. I'm done." So Janice had to say and had to laugh, because she said, "Well, this pony has been a show pony for like 15 years and has taken all these children and given them confidence and taught them how to show and seemed so happy." So Janice wanted to apologize for overdoing Moxie. And Moxie said, "No, you didn't overdo me. I just suddenly don't have that much energy anymore and my knees ache." So the knees aching, that was new to Janice. She said, "Really? Oh, I would have never asked her to go to all those shows if I knew." And I said, "Well, it just started to happen." Right away, Janice wanted to make it complicated, right? She was forgetting Occam's razor. She was like, "Oh, I should have known ahead. I should have known her feet, her knees ached. Why didn't I understand this?" And I said, "Don't do all that. It's new information. You just now received it. So now we're going to make a change. Keep it simple." That's the idea. She said, "All right." So I said to Moxie, "Do you want to live out in a field?" And she said yes, with other ponies. She didn't want to be isolated anymore. And she said, "I want to live out in a field with other ponies." And so Janice said, "Well, would it be all right with you if I had a shed built in the field?" She happened to own her own horse farm. "So that you could at least get out of the weather when you wanted to, but we promised to never close the gate. You can walk in, you can walk out. Would that be all right with you, Moxie?" And Moxie said, "Well, yes, thank you. It'd be perfect. Then I can do what I want, and if it gets cold and raw and windy and I'm not feeling perfect, I can just, go in my shed." So Janice said, "Okay, perfect. That's the answer." So in this case, it was simple. Just relax and know that the pony is just being a pony. It's not something you've done wrong. It's not something she hates you. You shouldn't have known about. It's just she's being a pony. She wants to be treated like a pony. She wants to live out in raw land and do what she wants to do, because ponies are very independent little creatures, and they like to do what they like to do. So we reached a happy conclusion chatting that through, and then in the end, they also were going to give Moxie some supplements to help her knees not hurt anymore so that she could have a more pain-free retirement by, giving her some herbs that reduce the inflammation in her joints. So they were going to talk to her vet and get that all sorted out. So that was a pretty simple answer. So this is the topic of the day, how to keep things simple when you are communicating with your own animal. And you are listening to Animal Connections with Laura Rowley. And I'll be back in just a few moments. Thank you for joining me today.
What if your dog, cat, or horse could help you with your love life? What would they suggest? It's fun to think about and a wonderful way to conduct yourself. After all, animals know well how to love and invite us to love them unconditionally. That's a pretty great way to live life. animals always communicate with our highest good as their central focus, even when sometimes we feel stymied or frustrated with their behavior. Visit laurarowleyhealer.com to book a workshop or private long-distance phone reading. Laura's readings and workshops help you find the part of you that's able to tune in and connect to your amazing animals. Laura Rowley believes we can all understand by listening differently. Book a workshop or private long-distance phone reading now by going to laurarowleyhealer.com. That's L-A-U-R-A-R-O-W-L-E-Y healer.com.
Uncover how self-love can help you become happier and more confident with Lorna Byrne, best-selling author of memoir, Angels in My Hair. Gain understanding about your connection with your guardian angel and let go of the negativity in your life. Mention discount code DREAM for 20% off when you register for the Angelic Path to Self-Love at Omega Institute in Rhinebeck, New York, October 22nd to the 24th. Learn more at eomega.org.
Animal Connections with Laura Rowley is an intuitive show created for you to learn what it's like to talk to animals. Laura shares 20 years of experiences of being a pet psychic and healer every Friday at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. Eastern Time on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, media partner for the Omega Institute. Our beloved animals share our lives and have amazing insights into our well-being, providing us with opportunities for personal growth once we truly begin to listen. It's fun to use animal wisdom to enhance our emotional and spiritual world. Who better than our furry friends to teach us the wisdom born of unconditional love?
Are miracles real? Can you move from mayhem to miracles? 30 prominent authors say yes as they share their high fives and down lows of challenges, abuse, addiction, and love. Experience hope, the magic elixir of miracles, through the personal stories of New York Times bestselling authors James Redfield, Dr. Bernie Siegel, Sister Jenna, Reverend Temple Hayes, and many more. If you like bestsellers, Chaos to Clarity, and Crappy to Happy, you'll love Crying and Laughing Through Mayhem to Miracles. Sacred Stories of Transformational Hope, available now on Amazon and in bookstores worldwide.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe. Relax and enjoy. Let life flow.
Welcome back. This is Animal Connections with Laura Rowley. You are listening on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, and I am on every Friday at 9 a.m. or 9 p.m. Eastern Time. You can listen online or on your mobile devices. Today's a happy day for me. I'm just going to do one little plug here. I participated in a lovely book, and it came out. So now I'm officially a published author. I'm going to brag a little bit. Anyway, the name of the book is available on Amazon. If you go on Amazon, you can see it's called Mayhem to Miracles. And so the way you search for it is Mayhem with the number 2 and then Miracles. And they are true stories of courage, triumph, and peace. And I'm just one of the people that contributed to the different stories, which I'm very honored to be amongst many fine people who contributed to different stories. James Redfield, Bernie Siegel. So I feel very grateful that I've been included in this. This book about how we can transform fear and anxiety and trouble into hope and they're beautiful stories, so you might want to get a copy and enjoy it. I hope you do enjoy it. Meanwhile, we're talking about how you can transform your own life with your animals. So, with people, I think what's important to remember is that we put an energy in that usually has to do with fear. Whenever we're trying to solve a problem, we worry, are we enough? Do we know enough? Can we make a good decision? Is this beyond us? So those are all things that are fearful. So fear makes us make a decision based on what we want to avoid. Like, we usually want to avoid being wrong, you know, because that feels awful. And it's a big deal. not because it's wrong to be wrong, but if we make a mistake, say our animal is sick, and we're not a qualified, say, physician, we're not a veterinarian, and we don't diagnose it because that's not our job, then our animal could get sicker, and it would be our fault. So it's pretty understandable why fear gets involved. But whatever we fear, or when we function from fear, we move away from resolution of our problem usually. In other words, without realizing it, fear sneaks up on us, and it starts to actually change how we're solving the problem, and it makes it worse usually. So here's a couple of good examples. Hannah has a lovely horse named Mia. And Mia, and she had been jumping on the circuit for horse shows, for 10 years. And Mia had started to show the day after her competitions where her feet were sore, like the veterinarian and the farrier were aware that her feet were starting to ache her after she showed. But she always seemed so enthusiastic to go to the shows, jumped in the trailer, hopped out of the trailer, was perky and lively through the shows. And really, the two of them had this beautiful kind of shared lifestyle where they went someplace every weekend and had an adventure and, you know, competed and tested themselves against other horses. And the horse seemed super happy, but now her feet were starting to hurt. So she was acting depressed and the opposite of herself every day after the shows. So Hannah was afraid. So this is what I want to talk about, is that fear piece, because it makes you lose your connection. Like, what was she afraid of? Hannah realized that maybe retirement was calling Mia. Maybe it was time to stop showing her. And for her, Hannah felt like, we have this shared joy we like doing, this amazing life we do together. This horse has taught me so much about competing, confidence, being a good athlete. That's such a shared love for us. I'm really afraid we're going to lose it if these feet are not fixable, and yet I don't want Mia to perform just to make me happy. So I'm thinking that what I should do, Hannah said, is buy another horse and start to show the other horse. But I feel horrible because Mia won't take it well. Mia's going to feel really rejected and abandoned. So we talked to Mia, and Mia said, abandoned? Rejected? No. None of that's true. We've had a great life. I've done this for, a decade or so. I just can't keep doing it any longer because I'm older than you. My lifespan is shorter than yours by a lot. So go buy another horse and go have fun and keep it simple. Keep it enjoyable. Enjoy yourself. Meanwhile, I'm going to work on retirement, and she had some ideas, Mia did, about what she wanted to do. Maybe have a little girl down the road, ride her, just no more jumping, but teach a child how to ride. She enjoyed the companionship, the camaraderie. She had taught Hannah so much. She said, I'll teach another little girl, but I just don't want to jump anymore because it makes my feet hurt. So Hannah wanted to throw in the kitchen sink there and say that, you know, I'm betraying her and I'm abandoning her. And the horse was like, no, I'll just find somebody else for me to ride because I enjoy the exercise and I really like being brushed and I like to have a little exercise every day. So that felt sort of simple to Hannah, and I know she felt a lot better because she was adding abandonment and guilt to something that wasn't necessary, right? We can see that about Hannah, but we can't always see that about ourselves, I think, right? So Hannah was putting in an energy that wasn't helpful to creating sort of a recipe of happiness. She was mixing into the recipe, into the energetic resonance of their relationship, all the stuff that really just made it worse. It's a bit like sometimes when we add complexity to something instead of simplicity, there's Occam's razor again, we start to create a recipe that is out of balance so that the energy between the two of us becomes me and the animal, you and your animal, becomes out of whack. So it's like filling a glass of water, with water, and then say adding a little lemon, and you end up with, you know, a nice lemony water, and that tastes good to you. But what if, on the other hand, you hardly put any water in the glass and you filled it with bitter lemons, you wouldn't be creating a nice lemon water. You'd be creating probably sour water, where all of a sudden you couldn't drink it anymore. And it's very simplistic. And pardon me for making it be so. But it's so simplistic because it means that we have to drink the sour water that we made. Instead of sweet, juicy water with a touch of lemon, we've made something now that's become bitter and hard to swallow. So what we put into a situation or a relationship kind of amplifies if we hit a place of stress or imbalance, and all of a sudden we realize, oh, I'm not drinking lemonade anymore. I'm drinking sour stuff, and I'm the one that put in too much lemon, right? So with an animal, each day, each attitude we have, training sessions with them, are adding to the relationship. You're either improving it or you're making it less of an ideal relationship. So there's another simple Occam idea. We're either making it better or we're making it worse. And you can ask yourself, well, what could I have done that made it better and what could I have done that made it worse? So we can examine ourselves and say that when I notice what I added, maybe stress or nervousness or a lot of human compulsion to it, I made it worse. Any trainer will tell you that it's seldom an animal problem. It's more likely a people problem when it comes to animals. We don't have the confidence sometimes to execute the outcome, so we kind of look to them to do it, and then we get upset when nothing happens. Some cases that I was recently involved with involve separation anxiety, and I know that's a big thing now with the coronavirus. There's a lot of separation anxiety happening because people adopted pets when they were home and now they have to go back to work. And what will happen to those animals? I think everybody's pretty aware that that's, you know, it requires training and thought. We've talked about that someone on the show. So I want to take that simple idea, though, today and take two different cases, okay? And in each case, the person took a moment to look at themselves and what they were adding to the mix, and they grew from the experience. So in one case was the case of Margaret and Pico. Pico was a little, I don't know, Pomeranian cross with something else that she got at a rescue. And when it was when Margaret started to go back to work, she also had to travel for work. So it took her, you know, well away from the home for sometimes days. Pico started to show signs of nausea, anxiety, and then, like, she wouldn't eat, and then she finally started to vomit when Margaret left the house. The veterinarian said, I think it's just nerves. I don't think there's anything really wrong with Pico. I think it's just nerves. Margaret decided that the thing to do would be to get another dog. So she called me up and said, I think Pico needs a companion. Would you help me by asking Pico, would she like a boy or a girlfriend? And what breed? Like, does she want a big dog to play with or a little dog? What would she like? So we talked to Pico, and Pico said, no other dogs, please. Margaret always picks chaos. She wants to make it more complicated. I don't want other dogs to deal with that are equally upset. I want more attention. Why would I want her to get another dog? I want her to come up with a different solution other than another dog that's just going to add trouble. In other words, she was going to layer some more complexity into the household with another personality. She says Margaret always does this sort of stuff. She always picks chaos. Can't she just take me to a dog sitter, or, you know, can't we figure out something else? So Margaret laughed and said, oh, I'm my mother all over again. She said that whenever her mother had horrible decisions to make, she would fled, like, sitting down and thinking it through, and said she'd make quick decisions without considering outcomes, and any fix was better than where she was, and she would just start making changes quickly, not really reasoning things through. She goes, I grew up like that, and you know, I have an eating disorder because of it. She said, I go to a therapist because of it. She goes, of course I'd have a dog with an eating disorder. She was laughing about it. She saw right away that her energy wasn't adding to peace or safety. It was adding chaos. A different situation was with a dog named Apple, little Chihuahua, and Tom. Same thing, separation anxiety. And Tom was really ready to sort of, I don't know, give her away because he said, I'm not a good enough home for her. I can't even make her happy anymore. I said, well, are you in love with this dog? Does she make you happy? And he said, yes. I said, well, then find a different way. In this case, that dog wanted another companion. Don't give me up. Don't think we have to, like, abandon each other, she said. Apple said, just get me another dog. I'll be fine with another dog if you go to work. So that gets complicated, but when Tom looked at himself, he said he tends to throw himself into a martyrdom role that he can't have anything he wants. So that was the energy he was bringing to it, instead of the simpler answer was, just give her some companionship and she'll be fine. So you can see two different cases, same problem, but it was what the person brought to it that complicated it. And so I think the message here, and I know I feel this way about myself, is learn about yourself and don't be afraid to learn who you are, because we tend to repeat our lessons. We tend to make the same mistakes we looked at when we were from our family of origin, from our significant relationships. There's usually a common thread. Find your common thread and say, ah, what if I take that common thread, take it off the table, that thing that always makes it more complicated, and I keep it simple. The dog, the animal, the cat, the horse, the bird, whatever your animal is, will also start to simplify, de-escalate, and happiness, I hope, will abound. I hope this has been helpful to you. You are listening to Animal Connections with Laura Rowley, and thank you so much for joining me again today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for joining Animal Connections with Laura Rowley. Heard every Friday at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. Eastern Time on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. Join Laura next time to discover how you can embrace the wisdom flowing from your loved animals. Communication starts with an intention to understand. Each week, Laura helps you find your own unique ability to create a better understanding of yourself as taught through the loving eyes of your animals. To connect with Laura Rowley, go to laurarowleyhealer.com. That's LaurarowleyHealer.com.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.